Myth number four. A great relationship requires common interests that bond you together forever. This myth sends people down the road into astonishingly ridiculous situations from which they often return bewildered or unhappy or even hostile. I know the hostile part all too well, for I too at one point believed in the myth that my relationship would be better if Robin and I did some activity together. If we developed a common interest. I wasn't satisfied with the fact that we had all sorts of smaller common experiences that interested us. I thought we needed one big thing to do together, so I came up with the idea. Tennis. I probably play tennis 300 days a year. My wife, while not nearly as avid a player as I, is an accomplished player who enjoys the game and appreciates the camaraderie. Frankly, I don't play for camaraderie. I play to compete, and everyone I play with plays to compete. The group of guys that I regularly play with would just as soon hit you right between the eyes with a short lob as look at you. My wife, on the other hand, gets a different kind of income from the game. She loves the exercise, the time she spends with friends, and the challenge of learning to hit the ball better and better each time she plays. About 10 years ago, based on this very myth of common interest, we signed up as a team in a mixed doubles league. Shared quality time, right? Good for the relationship, right? As I said, that was 10 years ago, and I'm not sure we're over it yet. She made me so mad I could have killed her. I made her so mad, I think she did try to kill me. By the end of the first set of the first match on the first night, we were not even speaking. She could not believe I was being so mean. I apparently slammed the ball too close to the lady on the other side. I wasn't friendly when we changed sides of the court. They all wanted to have a tea party. I allegedly rolled my eyes and sighed when Robin missed a ball. She, on the other hand, wanted to chat during points. Not just with me, but with the people on the other side. If the ball wasn't hit right to her, she wasn't about to run for it. I assume because she didn't want to mess her hair up. You've no doubt attempted some major project with your partner as well, thinking it would make the two of you closer. I'll never forget a woman friend of mine who tried fly fishing one morning with her husband. After an hour of listening to him complain to her about how she wasn't standing in the right place or casting to the correct part of the river, she dropped her rod and said, "It's 6 a.m., it's cold, you're rude, and I'm going home." And in case you haven't heard, you can buy fish at the supermarket in the middle of the afternoon. Perhaps you and your partner have a great common interest that makes the two of you happy. That's fine, all power to you. But the myth is that if you don't have one, you must find one in order to make the relationship more fulfilling. That's just not true. Not true at all. I have encountered thousands of older couples who have been married happily for years and years. They love their time together. They love being great companions. But they also respect one another's idiosyncrasies and don't feel they have to engage in lots of activities together. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. If forcing yourselves into common activities creates stress, tension, and conflict, then don't do it. Simply don't do it. The important thing is that you not label yourself as deficient or having a less committed love because you don't share common activities. Myth number five. A great relationship is a peaceful one. Once again, wrong. So many people are terrified of volatility because they think arguing is a sign of weakness or relationship breakdown. The reality is that arguing in a relationship is neither good nor bad. Indeed, let me turn this myth on its head. If arguing is done in accordance with some very simple rules of engagement, it can actually help the quality and longevity of the relationship in a number of ways. For some couples, such fighting provides a much-needed release of tension. For For others, it brings about a certain peace and trust because they know they can release their thoughts and feelings without being abandoned or rejected or humiliated. Don't worry about how many times you argue. That's not the determining factor in your relationship's stability and quality. Instead, it is determined by the nature of the way you argue and how you deal with the argument once it has run its course. If, for example, you are the type of combatant in a relationship who quickly abandons issues of disagreement and instead attacks the worth of the person with whom you are arguing, you are being a destructive force in your relationship. If you are the type who gets into arguments with your partner because the arguments are, in effect, more stimulating than the day-to-day life of being together, you are being equally destructive. And if your rage and impulses are so unchecked that you pursue a scorched-earth, take-no-prisoners approach, then you are taking on the quality of viciousness, which is an absolute killer in any relationship. Let's say you are the type of combatant who never achieves emotional closure at the end of an argument and instead gunny sacks your emotions, stuffing them away only to have them come bubbling out later. This is just as destructive as the dirty fighter. You must get emotional closure at the end of your arguments. Otherwise, at some point, you will vent all that stored up emotion and react in some cumulative fashion to some small issue, creating a huge disruption in the relationship. Cumulative reactions overwhelm your partner and make you sound like someone who has gone insane over the most trite and insignificant point. Let me be very clear about what I mean when I say emotional closure. I do not mean that you solve the problem. I mean that you get your mind and heart in balance and allow your partner to do the same. That will never happen if you buy into the next myth. Listen up. Myth number 6. A great relationship lets you vent all your feelings. Because we live in an era where we are constantly exhorted to get in touch with our inner this or that and then let it all come out in one great rush of emotion, it certainly makes sense that we should follow this dictate with relationships. We should just get everything off our chest, unload any thought or feeling that crosses our minds, hold nothing back, all in the name of openness. The problem is that based on results, totally uncensored venting of your feelings often just does not work. I have seen many a relationship destroyed because one or both partners just simply could not forgive something that was said in the heat of the moment in the process of venting. Even if you were willing to give your front seat in hell to take something back, you just can't. Indeed, I would wager that you can think of things right now that you said months or even years ago that, true or not, hurt your partner very deeply and have not been forgotten. Perhaps you've heard the story about the Baptist revival in which the zealous pastor was encouraging everyone to bear their souls and lighten their loads by unloading their guilt in front of the congregation. An old farmer stood up in front, moved by the invitation to confess, and exclaimed, "Reverend, I've drunken whiskey," to which the reverend said, "Tell it all, brother, tell it all." The old man felt great and said, "Reverend, I've chased women and been to houses of ill repute," to which the reverend excitedly responded, "Tell it all, brother, tell it all." The congregation clapped wildly to encourage this brave man who, finding never before felt courage, shouted, "I've been to the barn and had sex with the animals." Immediately a hush fell over the congregation. After a long silence, the reverend looked down from the pulpit and said in a hushed tone, "Brother, I don't believe I'd have told that." The point is clear. Before you say something that could be disastrous, you must give yourself breathing room. You must perhaps literally bite your tongue. And you must allow yourself time to deliberate. This is absolutely critical to the future of your relationship. I'm not telling you to hide truths and be dishonest. but I am telling you that in order to meet the criteria of being open and honest, you need to be sure how you genuinely feel, and you need to know if what you're about to say is going to be said in the most appropriate manner. And that may take more deliberation than is available in the heat of the moment. If what you have to say is going to potentially turn into a life sentence, either for yourself or your partner, you better think about it and think about it hard.